So I'm Jun Chengrong. You might notice the speaker has been changed from Ying Su to me. So unfortunately, he couldn't be here. If you want to hear the real cool stuff about numerics, this functional reuse method, which really reduces the amount of time you need to scan OPE angles, you should talk to him or talk to the local expert like David Poland or David Simon Duffin, and basically all the collaborators that worked on this O2 big project that people are really pushing really hard to. But I will talk about something different, which is related to three-dimensional ANCT1 bootstrap. You might notice there's an ask here, so I will talk about a few more Westermin models besides the ANCT1 ISIM model. But before we start, let's just prepare a little bit of the background. So the supercharge, alpha, in 3D, you can choose a base to make them Majorana, and therefore the R symmetry of 3D is essentially SON, and N would be the amount of supersymmetry you have, okay? So in our case, it's encoded 1, so that essentially means there's no leftover R symmetries. And because of this fact, nothing essentially is protected. Okay, I should really say nothing is more protected than the free theory. Than the non-supersymmetric case. Of course, the conserved currents would still be protected, but other long mod, essentially all other things are long, and their anomalous dimension would be changed along RG flow. Let's look at what's the multiplied structure. Suppose I start with spin L, act two supercharge, I'll get L minus a half, L plus a half, something like this. And then you act another supercharge, you go back to L, yeah? But in our story, we will heavily use time reversal symmetry. Essentially, what's happening is that suppose this guy has even parity, time reversal symmetry, this guy would have odd time reversal symmetry. So this is easy to understand if you write a superfield. Let's see, sigma plus theta bar theta, psi, plus theta bar theta, and let's call it epsilon. Well, of course, theta bar theta is parity odd, so they have two different parities, primary and descendants, okay? So it's either plus, basically they have different parity. So I'll call this type of multiplies to be boson plus. Plus is denoting the parity of the primary, or minus if it's negative, and the spin of the superconformed primary, I'll denote this multiply as this. So if it's fermion, it's the same story, g minus a half, g plus a half, and you both go back to g, but bosons are here, right? Why do we care about bosons? In the end, when we actually do bootstrap, we will use all the external operators to be bosons, and therefore the parity of the bosons are important. So essentially, if this guy is plus, this guy would be minus. They have different parity. So I'll denote this guy as a fermion multiplet, but g denotes the spin, and plus or minus depends on their parity, essentially. So if you wonder what's the conserved current multiplet, the conserved current multiplet would be fermion minus with, let's say, spin one current would be contained in g equal to 1/2. And when it hits unitary bound, these two would be coupled. That's essentially. So the first theory we're going to study is a Westermin model with zero potential to be of some form lambda sigma to the third. Sigma is what I showed here, okay? And if you write down the interaction, of course there would be connecting terms, but if you write down the interaction, it would be Yukawa coupling, one psi and psi bar psi, and lambda squared phi to the fourth. This is the interaction. So this model has a very interesting feature is that they have emergent supersymmetry, essentially. It was proposed by Aaron Gruer and Sheng and Vishwasnath, some famous quantum matter physicist. So the time reversal appears in this way. Suppose you do, these are Majorana fermions. Suppose you do time reversal, these two would change the sign. Therefore, you have to change the sign of phi in order to accommodate, I should call it sigma. you should change the sign of sigma to accommodate to the time reversal symmetry. So therefore, sigma itself is time reversal odd. So before we try to understand what it means, what emergent supersymmetry, let's first understand some very interesting bound obtained by Yu Nakayama and Ozuki. So we, as bootstrappers, we are probably very familiar with this plot, right? So it would be the 2D isomodel, 3D isomodel kink. You have the kink here, which is the three-dimensional isomodel. But this picture actually contains more information than just the isomodel. What they did is they chose this, draw this line at delta epsilon equal to 3. Actually, you rerun the code. Instead of interpreting this guy as isomodel sigma and epsilon, you interpret it as epsilon prime. Okay, you need to do a little bit change in your code by allowing epsilon to appear in epsilon OP. And you realize that the plot you got are the same as before. It doesn't change, at least in this region, it doesn't change. And you draw a straight line to be 3, and this is the region that is interesting. Why? This gives you a bound that suppose a CFT can be reached without fine-tuning, then the singulate scalar operator needs to have scaling dimension bigger than this value, essentially. I think it's 0.65. So that's essentially because we want our spectrum to contain just one relevant singulate scalars. If it contains two, you would need to do fine tuning to get rid of one of them, get rid of both of them to reach that fixed point. You can just think about the difference between isomodel and pre-critical isomodel, right? So essentially when people do lattice simulation on anti-ferromagnetic lattice, you typically would find a line of fixed point which corresponds to isomodel, but at the end of that fixed critical line, there is a tricritical isomodel. So it's the same type of logic. What does it mean by emergent supersymmetry? It means that supersymmetry can be reached without fine-tuning. This fixed point can be reached without fine-tuning. But there's an extra condition here. You need to preserve time reversal symmetry. So it basically means that suppose you prepare a lattice model, prepare a system material, and it's non-supersymmetric. But as you tune one parameter, as you reach that fixed point, the supersymmetry emerge. And in terms of our language, this means the spectrum of the model contains just one time reversal symmetry preserving, but relevant singulate operators. Is that clear? That's what it means by emergent supersymmetry. E preserving scalar. Okay. And in terms of this multiplet, that essentially means we need all the plus multiplet with r equal to 0, its dimension needs to be bigger than 3, right? Because its primary has dimension 3. And we need all the boson minus multiplet singulets to have dimension bigger than 2, because the primary has dimension 2, the descendants are pretty even. And you also need all the fermion plus multiplets with g equal to 1/2 to have dimension bigger than 3 over 2. You look at this table, you notice, okay, the fermion plus would contain a scalar, and because this guy dimension bigger than 3 over 2 means that this guy bigger than 2, okay? So, excuse me? This delta denotes the dimension of the primary, essentially. Sorry.
Yeah. But 5/2. Yeah. But which operator do you fine tune? You still need to fine tune one operator to reach the fixed point. Which one do you fine tune?
The one you fine tune is this one. This is sorry. That's a good point. Except for sigma. For sigma itself. This means the subleading one needs to be bigger than 2. Sigma contains contains already the parameter you find. So suppose you do the bootstrap, you set up the numerical details, what you find is this. Let's not impose this condition yet. Let's just bound the second boson minus. Let's just denote it as sigma prime. And the horizontal axis would be the dimension of sigma. Sorry. Excuse me?
David, would you like a mic? If the pattern of sigma has dimensions smaller than 3, wouldn't that be an obstruction to having emergence of a sigma?
No. You still need to fine-tune one parameter. One parameter is enough. That would mean you fine-tune this guy. It's less than 3, right? I mean.
OK.
Yeah. So that's the only parameter you need. Other than that, nothing is left. Yeah, that's. That's a better name, in fact, probably. So the plot you find is something like this. Initially, essentially nothing. There's a huge pike and nothing. There are some other structures over there, but let's not care about it. So it's very constrained. And the large region is a very, very small pike located here. It turns out, And if you impose this condition, you draw the line at 2 here, it gives you both upper bound and lower bound for the scaling dimension of sigma. And if you add some more assumption, you assume that this sigma prime is relevant ones. Actually, this tip is around 2.9. If you add if you required it to be the only relevant ones, and you would get an island, which looks like delta sigma. There's a sigma prime, something very tiny, added 1. The current best result is 0.584443. The error is 8, OK? So generated by David Polen. Yeah. So this was last year's story. And it was done by me and Ningsu and Atanaskov, Hillerman, and Devpol. So today's story is to essentially generalize the story to include more flavor symmetries. You might be wondering, OK, so after we started ISIM model, we got ON vector model. So in this story, if you add flavor symmetry, what would it be? It turns out it's also very interesting. So it turns out at this stage, the type of models we could study is essentially of this type. You have a superpotential, which is made of this form. And and this D would be some environment tensor of certain symmetry groups. You can think about what kind of groups you have, like permutation groups, adjoint representation of SUN, or there are something called F4 family of groups. That's essentially the type I would study. And why do we need to study this one? Because there might be easier ones, like W equal to H phi I phi I and plus lambda 2 H cube. This is another choice. It's just there are some tricks we are using to study the theory that makes it easier than this one. This would be the next stage, let's see. Right, okay. So in the SN symmetry case, I will be in, my scalar would be in the representation of N minus 1. In the SUN case, my scalar would be in the adjoint representation. And this DIJK would be the thing we are so familiar with, DI, EG, EK, and symmetric. And in the F4 case, It is an invariant tensor. It's 26 dimension. So why do we want to study this system? It's essentially because of this invariant tensor. If you do a group theory, you immediately notice. Let me just denote the representation of phi as n. Then you have n times n would contain a singulet, plus contain n and contain a bunch of other stuff. Okay, and in terms of fuse over fuse, what you have is this b minus n l equals to 0, dual OP, l equals to 0. What appears here would essentially be a boson plus l equals to 0, n, and bunch of other operators. This is the operator we care about. Why do we care about this operator? It's because the equilibrium motion tells us that d bar b of this phi I gives you dIg k by g by k. Okay. Then this essentially what's telling us is that in the intacting fixed point, these two combines into a single multiplet, a single super multiplet. This guy becomes a descendant of this guy. And when you do bootstrap, luckily we were able to see signatures like this. Okay. Can we show the slides? Yeah, so this is the plot. We are bounding this channel or this operator. So initially, as you increase the dimension of that phi, it's pretty much following the line of generalized free series. Okay, so the dimension of that quadratic operator is pretty much like twice of the dimension of phi. But when you reach that intacting fixed point, what's happening is that this multiplet recombination happens, and you don't observe this quadratic operator anymore. You observe the next one, which is much higher than what's observed, which is much higher. That's why the jump happened. Okay, you might notice this plot looks very much like the Fick prime effect that was introduced early by Denise in his talk. I'll comment on that later. I think these are physical ones. Why? Because we can look at the S3 case. You might notice that this jump precisely happens at the scaling dimension of delta phi to be 2 over 3. Okay? that's because the model really is this model, encode 2 model is phi. Or tutor to the cube. If you look at this model, this in the eyes of encode one people's eyes, it will be encode one model is S3 essentially, because if it's encode two, it has R symmetry. You are making one supersymmetry explicit. You have to break that R symmetry so that U one breaks into R, essentially S3. If you do that, you see this. So that's one evidence that this signal is probably physical, okay? And you can actually put this delta phi to be precisely 2 or 3, and bound the two operators. Horizontal line is the operator that's essentially, in encode 2 language, would be phi to the dagger phi. It's a singlet. And I should mention that this model has been studied very beautifully by Nicola Bobbio, El Shock, and Dalmio here, and Miguel Polas. They use encode 2 bootstrap to study this model. But now they give us data from bootstrap about this spectrum. And now we do encode 1, we compare with them, this match perfectly. So that's another evidence that this jump is not fake. It's a physical thing. Yeah, right. So now we can keep playing this game, and we change. We essentially draw a straight line at the delta at vertical axis along at 3. Let's see. We pick some value, And we do a bisection to determine the location of that jump, which is much more micro efficient. We don't need to draw these plots. And we can change the size of symmetry groups. This is a plot you get. There are a few things to be commented. On the right, top right corner, that's the S3 case I was talking about. The red line is the epsilon expansion result. There was a trick introduced by Fei, Jiangbi, and Klebnov, and Tarnoplosky. I apologize if I didn't see your name correctly. I mean, yeah. So the trick was that you can do Yukawa type of coupling from 4 minus epsilon, and in the end, you set the number of Dirac fermions to be 1 over 4. In the end, you are able to start a Majorana fermion, essentially. So this red line is the epsilon expansion result. As you can see, they match quite beautifully. This is two-loop result. There's of course still the question whether you should believe in epsilon expansion or not. But if the convergence is not too bad, it's still okay, I think. And when n is large enough, you might notice there's a both lower bound and upper bound. Lower bound is the jump I was talking about. The upper bound is because you require your superpotential to be dimension bigger than 2. That essentially tells you that this is an infrared fixed point. And it turns out, and when n is large, that condition is good enough to give you both upper and lower bound. OK, now comes the embarrassing part. let's play with SUN. The red line is still epsilon expansion result. And horizontal line, and these are changing 1 over n. It looks still good. Oh, I forgot to mention one thing. OK, as you approach n to be very large, this value approaches the scaling dimension of encode 1 IC model, essentially. But when n is large, this model decouples. It couples into some decoupled copies of encode 1 IC model. It might be useful to study conformal perturbation theory and try to get the 1 over n corrections and using the data from encode 1 IC model, OPE, as input. And that's certainly something you can think about. SUN case, it's a little bit weird that they are still approaching decoupled, looks like approaching decoupled IC model. Previous case, you can see it explicitly from epsilon expansion. You have an epsilon expansion series, you take the Lagrangian limit, you look at the series, you compare with the epsilon expansion series from ISO model, you see they are precisely the same series. This one, I don't know whether it's an accident or it is what it is, it's like this. But the real disturbing thing is the top corner, which is a SU3 case, which is related to some encode 1 duality stories, which I will talk about. And F4 case is something like this. F4 is, in fact, a family of Lie groups that is classified using bird track techniques. Essentially, these invariant tensors satisfy some relations you don't need to care about. But it contains essentially 5 groups. And the epsilon expansion does not agree anymore, which is essentially because they don't converge so well. We expect them to be not so weak. OK, these are the numerical results I'm going to show. And that's pretty much. Can we switch back to the board? Excuse me? Yeah. So first question is, why do we care, right? Well, they are there, and we can do it, right? That's one answer. Second answer is really we are trying to attacking encode 1 dualities proposed by many experts. But before that, let me talk a little bit about the numerical results, about SU3. This SU3 story has a very strong connection with what Denis talked about in his talk. Essentially, initially when we started, we realized the jump always precisely happens at delta equal to 2. You observe some jump like this. This is smooth. That's the plot I was showing you. Delta phi, delta b plus n. That's the fake prime effect that Nis talked about. Remember, our multiplied looks like this. If we have 1/2, you have 1, which is negative parity. You go back, half, okay. And when it hits unitarity bond, these two decouples. As Denise explained, the blocks looks pretty much like the F plus G equal to half block looks precisely like a scalar block, which also appears in this N channel. So that explains why this jump appears at precisely 30 equal to 2. So, but luckily, there's a trick introduced by this group that you can introduce a small gap in this channel, and to do your numerics again to see whether that jump still survives or not. In the 4D fermion bootstrap case, it didn't survive. So essentially, as you increase this gap, the jump disappears. But in the three-dimensional Eisen model case, the Z2 odd current contributes to a scalar which the dimension is 3. And if you do that analysis, you will see that jump actually survive. Okay? So what we did is that we introduced a small gap, and the jump moved to the right a little bit, but still is there. Right? So I was very happy. So that's the result. The plot I showed was after removing this fixed prime effect. So why do we care about this story? This story is related, as I mentioned already, it's related to Encode 2 dualities. And
can I ask a question about this jump? So, this name fake primary effect, I think it's a bit unfortunate because it's not always fake. Sometimes it can be physical. But okay, concretely about your case. So you can do the spectrum extraction and you can see what is the dimension of that current as you approach from the right.
Right.
For example, in the tests that they did, they saw that there was a current very close to the unitarity bound.
Right.
In fact, that's how they discovered this effect initially. But what about your case? Where's the current? Does it take some dimension which is not at the unitarity bound?
No, I took this current. This shouldn't be conserved. This is not the conserved current multiplied. I chose this bound to be 2.2, essentially. This is basically the scalar dimension to be 2.2. So you still see some lines here. But I think I really need to redo this after I saw Denise's talk. I need to increase it to much higher, let's say 2.5, 2.6, 2.7, to see whether this jump still survives. But before I saw Denise's talk, I thought this is enough. But that's a very good question. I need to recheck a little bit more. Up to the current stage, I think this is what we have got. Why do we care about this theory? It's because this is Encode 2, U1, you to chain level to be 0, you couple to 2 chiral field with charge 1. And this guy explicit symmetry is SU2 times U1. U1 would be the total current coming from this U1 edge group. And you have also the U1R charge. And it was proposed by Domingang, Yuji Tachikawa, and Yunakura in the 70s that this guy would flew to an infrared fixed point where the symmetry gets enhanced into SU3, Lewis symmetry. Basically, these two combines. And you are still having the U1R charge. And it was later proposed by Benini and Beniwiti and Dr. Gaiotto here and Zohar Gmodowski and Wu that this guy actually has another story, which is due to N equal to 1, SU3, Westphalmino model, with phi I in a joint. So this is precisely the model I started. So this pins down to if I increase the bound, so the story now pins down to if I increase this gap, whether this jump survives or not. This is something I learned from this bootstrap SUGU. I should redo. Why do I say this? This is because this symmetry enhancement happens because of this. First, QI, Q dagger I, QG is a SU2 current multiplet. There are some monopoles, and there are some U1 topological current. They combine themselves into a SU3 current multiplet. And because of Enkidu symmetry, their dimension is fixed to be delta equal to 1. As you have seen in my plot, it's around 0.8. So yeah, this is something to be noticed. So if the duality really is working, it should be at 1. I need to redo the numerics and do it more and more and more and more carefully to see whether it's happening. Right, so I should mention a little bit more data. If you compare the epsilon expansion result in the SU3 case, delta phi I, its dimension is around 0.28. This is from epsilon expansion. The jump is located around 0.8. You can study other spectrum, essentially phi I, phi I. It's 2.81. Oh, sorry, epsilon expansion. It's 2.81.
I'm sorry, which theory are we talking about at this stage?
This jump, essentially.
Okay.
So it's 2.38. And we can use extremal functional to estimate the dimension. It's around 2.8. Okay. So now I have to interpret the numerics. So first of all, probably related to what Slav just said, if I increase the gap a little bit more, probably it will disappear. And it's not Western minimum. Huh? Okay, let's hope. let me redo it, and we will have a conclusion. First, it's probably not Western minimum, or it probably Western minimum. If it's not, we have to come up with a theory that explains the numerics. But it's really, really hard to explain this term. Why? Because I mean, you can try to engineer some other models that has SU3 symmetry. For example, the easiest example would be, let's see, lambda 1 h to the cube plus lambda 2 dijk phi I phi g phi k, and let's see, lambda 3 h phi I, this type of interactions. Okay, but if you go through the decoupling argument, you notice your decoupling happens like this. Phi I goes to h phi I plus lambda 3 here, lambda 2 okay, this guy gets decoupled, but you are left with another combination, so that jump still won't happen. So you can try to engineer this easy example of SU3 models. There's no good way to explain that jump. Right, so suppose we buy the numerics, then probably this is not a duality. Then because this duality was derived from some well-known Enkidu 4 dualities, so it's probably that these two theories are connected to each other by edge flow. So you can ask the question, if it's not duality, it might be RG flow connecting these two. You can ask which one from which direction they are flowing, right? So one possibility is this Enkidu 2 would flow to Enkidu 1, and essentially this superpotential term would be contained in some super Enkidu 2 multiplets, right? And let's look at the long multiplets of Enkidu 2. The long multiplet structure of Enkidu 2. Sorry. So a generic lambda multiplet would be spin zero. And there's a delta here. R charge is zero. And you act a few Qs, that box here, a box here, go back, something here. Q R, this is Q. Let's see. You have a singlet here. R charge would be two. And you can keep going, going down. Box here, and this guy would be a zero scalar. Delta equal to delta plus two, and R equal to zero. Okay. If there is indeed an equal one flow from the equal two theory, we need to this guy to be relevant, essentially, because it's annihilated by one half of the supercharge. It preserves the equal one symmetry, and it needs to be to have dimension less than three. So the, if that's indeed the scenario, what's in the equal two story, it needs to contain such a long multiplet. I don't know if there's ways to study this multiplet in more advanced techniques. But as a bootstrapper, probably we want to study this theory using bootstrap. One interesting part of this theory is that they are conserved current multiplet. And the central charge could be worked out using localization, and you can put anomaly into it, and therefore you know you are studying this theory. And there you can try to extract the spectrum and see whether it contains such a multiplet, which is parity odd, long multiplet, dimension between one and two. If it contains this thing, then probably this is a story. But I should mention that this guy would not, this type of thing would not change your equal two flow, because this is parity odd, and that theory preserves parity. It won't change much of your equal two flow, but when you break equal two to equal one, there's a potential that this multiplet might be relevant to our story. Okay, I have 20 minutes. That's all the juice. I am going to explain a little bit about the details of technology. So, and if you are bored, feel free to go grab a coffee or go to the bathroom or whatever.
Sorry, sure. So this is just one way that you can cook up an equals one preserving relevant operator, sort of hiding in a big n equals two multiplet.
Right.
But aren't there other such operators that you can find, say, in the short n equals two multiplets?
That's a good question. Probably yes. I don't know. You need to enter. Yeah. Probably possible. Actually, I made a small example here. So we really need to think about the type of multiplets that appears in current OPEs and what they are, and examine all of them to see whether it contains a potential relevant angle one deformation.
Okay.
See. Yeah. So that's all about the results. As I have said, the parity of the primary and the descendant are different. Suppose you have a bosons multiplet or Fermion multiplet. So this essentially means that when you do, if you restrict your crossing equations to primaries, then this parity basically fixes the problem. In the sigma-sigma OPE, you would have just one conformal primary. That means your super multiplet, as you restrict it to the conformal primary, super conformal primary, it goes back to just one non-supersymmetric block. So that means you have to fully use the power of supersymmetry. You need to consider crossing equations not just from the primary, but also from the descendants. And that's the idea of long multiplet bootstrap. It's just this case is easier. We can choose a base that the external operators are just scalars, and that actually captures all the supersymmetric constraints. If you are doing stuff contain more supersymmetry, you probably need to contain external operators to be scalars, fermions, and other things, and that would be slightly more complicated. Essentially, in ANCO to one language, the three-point function looks like this. Suppose I have a spin L object, and these are super written as a superfield language. And x is x1 minus x2 with some theta. And you can define this capital X and capital theta. Essentially, under superconformal transformation, the transform only the Lorentz rotation matrix and the scalar factor depends only on x1 and theta1. Okay, so by using these two, you can write down the allowed tensor structures in, that can appear in your three-point function. This eta is an auxiliary field here. So there are four allowed three-point structures. One is like eta capital X1 eta, and to the power of L, this would be the boson plus. You have to cancel it to cancel the scaling factor. But schematically, this is it. Another one is theta one, and also this thing, eta bar X1 eta to certain power. This would be a so-called boson minus modulus. And the third one would be eta capital X1 theta and eta capital X eta bar to g minus a half power. This would be what I denoted as fermion plus modulus. And there was another one which eta bar capital theta 1 to g minus a half power. This is what I denote as a fermion minus one. So indeed, you have four three-point structures, and this corresponds to the four different type of multiplets we are studying. So how do you do the numerics? Essentially, let's start with the simplest example. Let's call O to be a scalar, which we denote O plus some fermion contributions, plus theta one bar theta one, called O minus, okay? And we consider the three-point function. Okay, let's call it O tutor to make it a superfield. You expand this three-point function. You notice there are a few contributions. There's O plus sigma sigma, plus another term which is theta two bar will be O minus sigma and F. And the third term, which is theta 2 bar, theta 2, theta 3 bar, theta 3, and O plus, I should call it epsilon. This is the descendant, epsilon and epsilon, okay? And essentially, their OPEs are related to each other and constrained by supersymmetry. This is the type of things you need to work out by expanding these three-point structures. If this guy carries a spin, then here there are some descendants. Hear me? Here there will be some descendant contributions, descendant three-point functions. You need to get rid of them. So by starting these three-point structures, you will be able to get all the OP constraints. It's written in my paper with Ning. And the rest you need to do is to consider the Eisen model mixed correlator bootstrap equations. What you have is sigma sigma O, lambda epsilon epsilon O. There are some block. Let's call it V plus. And there's vector sigma sigma O, lambda epsilon epsilon O, plus another sum O to the to all the operators will be sigma epsilon O squared. V minus, these are the crossing equations for Eisen model. Let's just write a few examples, a few lines to remind you guys. This V plus is a set of 4x4 matrix. Here is F minus sigma, 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 0, 0, 0 here. Some terms, the last one is 0 F plus, sigma, sigma, epsilon, epsilon, f plus sigma, sigma, epsilon, epsilon, and it's zero. This is a line. And that one we minus is some zero, zero. The last one is f plus epsilon, sigma, sigma, epsilon. Sorry. This is the crossing equation coming from bootstrapping mixed correlator in Eisen model. As I said, you worked out an OPE, you plug them the ratios in, and you contract this 2x2 matrix into a 1x1 matrix. Okay? And this guy is also related to this sigma sigma O. In the end, you add these two terms together. You have four different multiplets, therefore you have four different these combinations. And you put them in your computer, and you enjoy the numerics, okay? And turns out there's another subtlety, is this, in fact, if you just run this, you would realize that the numerics would just blow up. In fact, it's because these five equations are not all linear independent. One of them it depends on the other four. You can delete one line. Initially, we observed this numerical fact, and we just deleted one line. And we tested the dependence, and we deleted that line. But in fact, you can by counting four-point structures, you can actually study it and actually prove that there are just four equations. So it's interesting to see that numerics knows what's the right answer. So in some sense, it's very interesting. Yeah, I was going to explain the counting of number of crossing equations, but let me skip that part and just conclude with some overviews.
Sorry,
so,
can I?
Sure.
Can I ask, so you're ignoring here the fermionic descendants, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. But in principle, they would give you extra crossing equations and extra constraints that you could also give to the
right, numbers. Right. Okay, maybe let me still explain that part. It would be real quick. In fact, how would you actually make a most systematic study is you count superconformal invariants in four-point function. So what does four-point function looks like? Sigma, 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 sigma would be a four-point function. And you can write down their ansatz. There are some factors which takes into account the scalings. And after that, there will be some super invariants, F, U, and V. UV are the supersymmetric generalization of U and V. And there are some invariants, I1, which F, U, V, let's call F0, F1, I2, F2 plus I3, F3, okay? All depends on supersymmetric generalization of U and V. Then these I's are nilpotent superconformal invariants, and you can do a counting. In fact, as I explained here, is theta 1 depends on three coordinates, but we can similarly define theta 2, which I will be using three coordinates, which I chose to be 1, 2, and 3. Okay? So essentially, you write it as in the same structure, like that, but you replace this 1, 2, 3 as 1, 2, well, okay, it's still 1, 2, 3. And then you can define a theta 4, which you so you change this 2 to be 4 and 3, okay? And thetas and x, similarly, you define it in this way. And you count the superconformal invariants. There's a u or u and v. There's a theta 2, there's theta 2, theta 4, there's theta 4, and there's theta 2, x2, x4, theta 4, okay? And there's a few more, which is theta 2, x2, theta 4, theta 2, x4, theta 4. And there's the most important, the highest one, theta 2, theta 2, theta 4, theta 4, okay? These you don't like, because they break time reversal symmetry. And then in the end, you have three structures. That's the three appears here. And you can analyze their crossing under two and four coordinate flip. You would notice that indeed they're just four. Usually, you can choose a base. You choose your external operators to be fermions or bosons. It's just in this case you are lucky. You bosons are enough. But suppose you want to do four-dimensional anchored one, you definitely need bosons, you need fermions, probably also need vectors, and would be much more harder. So, right, okay. Now I finally can talk about the overviews. What else can we do? First, we can try to do a light cone bootstrap. In this case, there's a small complication, but I think you can solve it. I'm trying. In this case, you have this type of repeaters, mu1, mu l, phi. You make the symmetric minus the trace, blah, 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 blah. Okay. This is, let's count its dimensions, 2 dot phi plus l. L would be the spin. But you also have this type of repeaters, gamma mu. Notice I put gamma here. Minus trace, and try to make it a super primary, and its dimension is the same. So 2 delta psi plus L minus 1, which is equal to 2 delta phi plus L, okay? That's the thing. So the mix. So when we use inversion formula, we solved a density that receives contribution from OPEs and OPEs time non-loss dimensions. But in this case, both of them contribute to that quantity. So but luckily their contribution is I think it's controlled by supersymmetry. So you have to solve this mixing problem. I hope I will have something more to see later. Okay, that's one thing. Second thing is that we could try to relax T environments. Remember I just said these ones that we just threw away. So if you don't throw them away, you actually would get four more equations. And actually in your three-point function, the two tensor structures I just showed you, eta bar, eta to the power of L, and this guy, theta, eta bar, x, eta to the power of L, they can both appear in a single three-point function. So this is, if you have arrow down fermion bootstrap, you notice there are, for same operators, there are more than one tensor structures. It's the same thing here. You have two OPEs. And these four eight equations are in fact 2x2 matrix. And these 2x2 matrix are given by these OPEs. And you have to do a semi-definite programming to study that. So we can try to answer other questions like interesting things. Like, for example, the superpotential suppose it's 5-4. Does this theory exist or not? Right? Things like this. And also things like can we start the inked one transaminase type of series. That's and something to do later. And the third one, as I already alluded a little bit, is that you can study superpotential of this form. This is more interesting because it's also very interesting. It's also related to some inequality and dualities that was proposed. And usually what's happening is that on one side is Westermann model, but on the other side, is some gauge theory, but in this case, the chain level on the due side is not zero. So essentially, what was proposed is that this RG flow has emergent time reversal symmetry. Because of this, your operator that breaks time reversal needs to be irrelevant. That's usually something to be tested. Actually, if you look at what are the operators, it's h squared plus some number of phi I, phi I. Suppose this guy appears in your superpotential, it will be break time reversal symmetry. One of them at the intersection fixed point, sorry, there's another term here, h to the cube, becomes a descent. Sorry, one of them becomes a descendant of H, the other one is left there, and for the duality to work, you need that guy to be having dimension bigger than 2. Epsilon expansion tells you it's around 2.036 or something. So that's something we should try to test. It's in the paper by Benigni and his collaborator. It's essentially explained there. But to study this theory, you can, of course, first try to do vector types vector representation of O(n) bootstrap. It's just we didn't find anything yet. But if you try... If you try to generalize the idea of multiplicative recombination, what's happening here is that this phi I would eat an operator which is denoted as h phi I, okay? And this recombination happens at the vector channel. So that essentially means we have to do, we have some chance if we do mixed or correlator bootstrap between anchored one scalar, no, O(n) scalars and O(n) vectors. There are some chances there we can study them. Yeah, the last piece is the joke. Probably we can do mass production of bootstrap results. So you give me an environment tensor DIJ key, I can play with it and try to see whether we can see something about this theory. But you can think about what kind of symmetry groups would have this environment tensor. The easiest example is you pick the structure constant of 2 D groups and you make your scalar to be in the bi-adjoint. And you can play with it. You can probably engineer some conformal window. And yeah, but we have to stop somewhere. Let's stop.
Can you comment on similar ideas being used for non-supersymmetric theories with discrete symmetries?
Well, I think the lesson you learn here is just it's better to think about these decoupling conditions, these equilibrium motions. If it gets powered by some effects, like the SU3 case I explained, if you won't be able to explain it, see it just from a single correlator bootstrap, you probably can add the ones that didn't decouple into the system and study that specific channel to see whether there's a jump or not. I think this kind of argument would be useful for bootstrapping essentially a Western middle dipole model. But Landau-Ginzburg type of models. But I think it's more interesting to think about what's happening in gauge theory, what kind of decoupling you can argue from there. But I don't play right.
Nobody cooked up a question in the meantime, so I guess we have to thank Chun Chen again.